This is a top to you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board.
Oh.
11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on The Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-6583. Now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, everybody, welcome aboard Boxed Up here for a Thursday night or Friday afternoon, depending on where you are on this beautiful blue marble, such as it is. And it's a massive day here on Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And I want to welcome all the new chatters and listeners that have come tonight via MySpace. It's great to have you with us. I know you all are really excited for today's guest, so I think we should waste no time in getting him on. So I would like to introduce, it is my great pleasure and honor, the maestro, the one, the only, Mr. Travis Meeks. Travis, welcome to the program, my friend.
Mucho. Hello.
Hey, how are you, man?
I'm good. I'm actually sitting here looking at a photo shoot that I did that is actually just wonderful. It is a wonderful photo shoot. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great, man, and I've been bombarded by messages from friends of yours on MySpace today. I think I spent about 5 hours replying to messages for people that were, just looking forward to this interview, because I think this is a rare opportunity for fans of what you do to actually get to hear a conversation with you about where you've been, what you're doing, what's going to be happening with Purple and everything else. So I've been looking forward to this. You and I have had some great conversations over the last week. And like you said the other day, let's just stop here and continue this energy on air, which I think was just a tremendous concept. So,
okay.
Go ahead, mate.
I just got to get my head out of these pictures. I'm so taken. their beauty. Oh, the narcissism. No, actually, a lot of it is atmosphere as well. The way I did my photo session was I build scenes, something I love to do. Much like, I guess the best way to describe it is, you know, like Hollywood sets. You know how they build for studios and stuff?
Yes, I do.
I mean, I like to decorate different themes and do it in my way and to try to create an energy. And I've always done that to write my music. That's how I've always operated. I'm really putting a lot of energy in the artwork, photos, and the image on this neighborhood and the music, all of the above, because just so we can just clarify that. In the past, I had people trying to run things for me and thought they knew what was best for me. But when you're with most bands, that works. But when you're dealing with someone who has the passion and desire and it's just in their bones to handle all their affairs and has the full vision, it becomes a little complicated. And, you know, then information and gets turned into so many different, you know, things. And so there's been like a stigma involved with the name, the brand name, Days of the New. And today, I would like to clear some of that up. Also, what I would like to do is let you know where I've been, where I am, and where I'm going. And anything else we want to talk about that, you know, involving my recovery, which it means the non-uses of alcohol and drugs, and my take on it, and anything you want to talk about. I'm an open book. I have nothing to hide. It's one beautiful thing about it.
It's one of the things that struck me with the chats that you and I have had over the last week, and you know, things like recovery and addiction are something that we talk about a lot on this network. One of our hosts, Peter Godbold, was on the wrong end of a crack pipe for 15 years, and we believe in sharing these stories and these tales with people are only going to do good for people when you know, you remove some of the stigma about addiction and get dealing with the issues that maybe caused the addiction or brought it on, and how you get through and recover from addiction. Because, you know, addiction is an awful thing. I mean, you know, I've been working in the music industry for years. I've probably dealt with virtually every addiction you can name with different artists, and it's
I'm one of the few. Last I heard is 7% of crystal methamphetamine addicts get clean. Now, 7% of that 7% get clean. So what is that, like 3.5? I don't know.
It's minuscule.
That's the statistics of people getting clean. I tell you this, man, that drug used properly. Now, I'm not, glorifying it or, you know, highly recommending people to do it, nor am I telling them not to do it. But for me, the experiences that I needed to have, quote, hear me now, the experiences that I needed to have mentally, spiritually, visually, that drug was my drug. Acid, mescaline, ecstasy, marijuana, any other drugs that could have offered me, you know, an alternate state of being, you know, even alcohol, you know, alcohol just kind of, you know, was a, you know, just kind of numbed the moment just so you could act like a fool. And in this industry, you know, everybody's expecting you to act like a fool in some kind of charismatic way. I'm a very intellectual individual. I would like to, if you don't mind, first off, I'd like to just hear a little bit about where you want to go with this, and then I would like to share with you where I would like to go with this.
I would like to get into some music before too long, but I kind of think if we talk about the addiction thing and get it out of the way, it frees us up a little bit, because I know that is. It's probably not the greatest subject in the world. However, you're talking to a group of people that do not have a stigma oriented view on these issues. And you mentioned the fact that these were, you know, ways to alter consciousness that actually worked for some sort of benefit at a time, and I can see that. But there was definitely a point where it ended up affecting other parts of your life in a negative fashion, and also your health.
Now may I, excuse me if I'm interrupting, but may I translate what I'm hearing you say? Now, what I heard you say was, you know, what you said verbatim. Mm-hmm. But what I'm getting out of what you're saying is that, the use of substances and taking that path it shares the same similarities as trying to be a Buddhist or some kind of guru. I mean, you can go too far. You can definitely go too far no matter what you do. I don't care what it is. I mean, you can be a bodybuilder and over bodybuild and like pull your muscle out for good and like totally screw yourself. You can actually drink too much water and get over hydrated. You can overdo anything. And as Americans, that's what we know what to do. I know you're not of that. I don't know if that's if you get to experience the same thing, although the world is highly influenced by American culture. My opinion is only because, you know, we're the ones whining that we need justice and freedom, which we already have justice and freedom. There's just always going to be that guy who thinks he knows it all and who's trying to organize things. But that's how, you know, the universe works. I mean, you know, it's like you watch all these futuristic movies about, you know, the end of the world and, or you know, organized, you know, religion like Equilibrium or, you know, even The Matrix was based around that, trying to organize a way of thinking or a consciousness to keep things under control. And the thing is, this feeling is a very complex thing. And what I've learned is that some people, in order for human beings to feel, certain human beings have to be sacrificed because of their inability to control themselves. And that's a sad thing. You know, it is a sad thing. But, I mean, I will top that off. And I'm a very deep feeler, and I'm a very deep thinker. And I experience a duality and a struggle between those two worlds. I'm sure that's not taboo to anybody who's listening to me right now, nor you.
Not at all.
But the difference is that, you know, I'm very aware of it, and I focus on it. I write about it in my lyrics and music, and I express it every day. And what I get off on is honesty. And if... go ahead. You have anything you want to say?
Well, I'll just kind of springboard off of that. You know, you mentioned that that you get into this in the music, and isn't writing about your own issues very cathartic and healing? And not only that, help to reinforce the changes that you have made or are trying to make or trying to maintain.
Oh, you have no idea. I mean, I started when I was 11 years old getting really serious. And my mind frame was, I had it. I knew what I was doing. This is what I was doing. I had it. I owned it. But the skills and techniques and frame of mind that I was in, the different ways of thinking, only served me so far and so much. Now, I can relate that, and I can project my own judgment of thyself unto the world, and I can see the same behavior in the music industry, in the entertainment industry, and in the world itself. And how I can top that off is everybody's on a journey, and I practice every day not judging anyone. As much as resentment is trying to own space in my brain, I practice thoroughly trying to keep my brain open for the things that are important and prioritize, because fear and negative energy, let me back up. Fear is always trying to own me. It is always trying to own me, and let me define that. My ego is trying to tell me who I am. My ego is trying to tell me who I think I am. And my ego is trying to tell me who you think I am. And that's a lot of expectations. You end up carrying the weight of the world, you know, and these are things that to a small degree, now if I was to say negativity has a purpose, like, okay, we have positive and negativity. In this world today, you know, a lot of people are brought up that it's positive or nothing, you know, it's all or nothing. And then that leads to pride, and that leads to a lot of sexual issues, a lot of deep-seated issues that cause us to have to label each other's bipolar, ADD. I've been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, which is a mild autism, which also, I don't know where I'm at, and I don't know where we have arrived in this conversation, but I would like to, if you would allow me, just kind of start from the beginning and give just like a brief, quick story from 95 all the way up to now, if you wouldn't mind.
Please do, mate. The floor is yours.
Okay. All right. Well, I would like to say that I may sound a little silly. I do suffer from narcissism and high obsession on my work. I do try to practice taking time, socializing and practicing compassion and being of service to other people. It's very healing, getting out of myself. Let's see here.
He's come prepared. He's got notes, folks.
Yeah. I went ahead and had to go out with it because, you know, I'm manic, and I'll just talk, and then 3 hours will go by, and we only got an hour. So let's fit this in an hour and play some songs and just go around the world with this energy we got going here. And by the way, thoroughly enjoy your energy and talking to you. Okay, there's how I want the world to see me, and then there's how I am. And they share similarities. And when I let go of my ego, I just seem to be who I am. And my passions seem to weigh, and I'm going to label myself. That's because it's a language that seems to be dominant in society and consciousness today. There's nothing wrong with labeling, and we need to judge and la 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 la. And if you ask me, there's nothing wrong with wrong, but the idea of wrong itself, you know. Only I can kick my ass, you know. But that's a deeper story. That's a whole nother deeper story. I am a folk artist. That's what I am. I am a folk world classical composer. It's in my blood. My grandfather was a conductor and a composer. He worked in the military. My father, by the way, my grandfather on my mother's side, by the way. Now, my father was a singer and a songwriter and a very, very charismatic front man who dressed like, kind of like, who wore white outfits, like white Vegas outfits with like, you know, gold tassels and stuff, and kind of had the Elvis thing going on. And he had the most amazing voice, but he was a spectacular songwriter. He got kind of caught up in the John Mellencamp meets Foreigner scene, and he had to face recovery himself. He's got 21 years. Forgive me for breaking his anonymity, but I've ran it by him. He doesn't mind. This is my story. This is mine, you know. But, again, I'm a folk world classical composer. I play multi-instruments. I do go under the name Maestro because Maestro is another word for master of the acoustic guitar, theatrics, animation, and my craft. I'm a master of my craft, just like you can say Stevie Ray Vaughan is a master of his craft. Now, Kenny Wayne Shepherd can come out and play the blues, but Stevie Ray Vaughan was the master of his craft. There's people who are masters of their craft. And what I'm telling you is that music is still growing. I'm living proof that it is still growing. Now, trying to find a way to work with the music industry is another story, and evolving with technology and marketing and la, 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 and short attention spans, with you know, iPods and downloads and so forth. You know, meaning. But meaning is a whole nother story. Anyways, I'll continue on. Like I said, I lyrically write about my trials and tributes, and I'll go ahead and share you my delusions and hallucinations, if you don't mind, which I believe is real. There's no difference. I just have to check up on it. The only reason why I call it delusion and hallucination is because it's not something that you can go into a bank and talk to someone about. I don't know. Anyways, I write about World War III. And I believe World War III is the battle of man inside. Now, let me separate my opinion from projection. This is how I see things. For me, I believe World War III is inside of me. You know, I believe it's me trying to find a natural consciousness that's already working with animals, trees, grass, the sun, the moon, the stars. It's a balance that keeps the black hole where it is, the sun where it is, and keeps everything rotating, and just keeps everything just right where it is. The force. May the force be with you. like I said, I do have Asperger's syndrome, which has been difficult to deal with from 8 years old, being misdiagnosed with many different disorders. I am a recovering drug addict. I do suffer from panic attacks, I have this strong relationship with fear, and actually some very bondage relationships with fear that I can relate with sexuality that I experienced 6 years under the gun with methamphetamine that I'll go into here in a minute. Some people may call me delusional and that maybe I hallucinate, but, you know, I know the difference between my feelings and reality and the hard realities of the world. If you'd like to stop me anytime, go right ahead.
No, you're doing fine, man. I like the idea of giving you kind of a chance to lay it all out without me interfering too much. Just because I think that you wouldn't normally get this kind of an opportunity to just have an open microphone to say, hey, this is who I am, and this is how it differs from the projected idea of who I am.
Okay. All right, well, then let me continue on. I'll make this faster. I'll go as fast as I can. Like I said, I was born in music, born into it. 1 year old, holding my ears, crying in clubs while my father was singing rock and roll, Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, you know. And my mother was like, you know, trying to get me, you know. My mother is, she suffers from many disorders, extreme phobia and traumas, and she can't even drive. She's a very deep individual. She claims she hears angels. She's very earthy, and she loves to manipulate her environment. She's got a green thumb, and she loves plants. She's very whimsical. Very chimes, kind of earthy kind of lady, you know. And but my mother and father are not together no more. They separated when I was two. Anyways, born in music. I got two uncles. I got one uncle that is the leader of the largest church in Kentucky. He's the leader of the choir. I have another uncle who is a lounge singer. And my grandmother on my mother's side, she was a lounge singer in Jersey. So music.
Oh, right. My home state.
Yeah, music is strong in my family. It's in my blood. Now, I grew up in a town called Charlestown, Indiana, that I had some trials and tribulations with, and I got caught up in the wrong system, you know, and they were just trying to, you know, do shock therapy on me, you know. It's like, erase the emotions. Let's make this man conform. But with Asperger's syndrome and not being diagnosed properly, you know, I got dealt a hand of cards that made it even harder on me. I'm a living miracle for many different reasons, because I didn't, you know, I didn't go crazy on someone, because I have done, you know, quote me, I've done some psychotic things. I'm not a criminal mind. I just feel deeply. And if you know anything about Asperger's syndrome, or you don't, study up about it. It'll let you know a little bit about what I'm going through, you know. I have no intention of being a criminal at all. I'm not a thief. I'm not a liar. I may be somewhat subconsciously a manipulator, but I work on these things as part of my recovery. I moved to Louisville in 95. I started writing on the Orange album that was released in 97. And that gave me an outlet of all this pain and separation from the parents, You know, I grew up with my grandmother. You're following me, right?
I am absolutely following you, man.
Wrote the Orange album on a four-track. I, like, went into this isolated stage, and I wrote this album on my four-track, verbatim, the Orange album. I'm not sure if anyone's familiar with this record, but it was the first Days of the New album that was released, that Touch, Feel, and Stand, Shelf in the Room, and Downtown, which all reached number one for a number of weeks. Touch, Feel, and Stand reached 18 weeks on the rock charts, number one. Downtown was like Shelf was like, I know you don't, some of this stuff doesn't even matter, but hey, at the end of the day, you know, it's an accomplishment.
Oh, yeah. And at that time, I remember at that time, you know, you and brain fart at the moment, the original other guitar player in on the Orange album were both winning all the, you know, best new guitar player awards and all the guitar magazines. And, you know, there was a huge amount of focus on you. And at that time, you also were able, you also ended up going out and actually opening up for your, you know, your heroes of youth, Metallica, at the time. So, I mean, this is just like a huge thing to get pulled into.
Orange was released in 97. We did some videos. We did two videos, Touch, Feel, and Stand and Shelf in the Room. Touch, Feel, and Stand reached number one video played on MTV. In 98, we did tour with Metallica. We sold around 2 million albums from the first record. We did really well in Canada, really well in the States. And then in 98, see, this is what happened. I was in, of course, as I'm sure you could already get a little taste of my character, you know, I'm very, very visual. I'm like a director. I have a clear vision of what's going on. And art and the tree symbol of Days of the New and the colored albums, all that stuff means so much to me. I mean, I'm like Iron Maiden on crack. The only difference is that I'm spiritually growing, and I'm going to surprise you my next record. And I'm going to surprise you again. And if I can... And another goal of mine is to keep songwriting and melody strong, you know, and consider evolving with the times. But when you're dealing with ethnic, classical, and world and theatrics, it's timeless. And folk music, you know.
Absolutely.
So one of the things of the Orange album, it blew up fast, all right? We're talking acoustic band. Folk songwriter wrote the whole fucking record. Oh, sorry. Excuse me. I said fluff.
That's all right, man. You're on the internet. There ain't no FCC here. Welcome to freedom.
All right. Well, I wrote the whole record on a four-track. All I tried to do was translate that over into just a wider sound. Now, at first, I wasn't going to have a guitar player. It was just going to be me, a bass player, and a drummer. And even before that, I could barely get the bass player and drummer to get involved because it was acoustic. Now, I will admit that they did like songs like Freak, if you're familiar with that song, because it had a heavy edge to it. But we were currently in a metal band, and I did some acid and experienced some humility and experienced, like, just some revelations with God, including having this vision with the tree itself. That I've been writing blogs about on my MySpace, it was pulling teeth trying to get people to even like play with me. So I decided that I want this left and right sound, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So I write all the guitar parts, you know. I orchestrate, you know, the bass part, which the bass parts were the same as the guitar parts. There wasn't much difference. Which I will say, Jesse Vest added a few different flavors. And Matt Tall really his claim to fame, even over the band Tantric. The best thing that Matt Tall ever did was the drum track to Touch, Feel, and Stand. Now, he owns that, and I will let that go. The drum track to Touch, Feel, and Stand, that but all he's doing is following my, because I'm playing an acoustic guitar. And when you're playing that rhythmic acoustic guitar, you know. So he just kind of innocently followed me in a strange way, you know.
Well, yeah, you were leading him. You know, in that situation, the guitar becomes another percussive element. It's another percussion instrument.
Yes. So what I'm expressing to you is that this is an acoustic band that I came from metal, and what I found out is that my anger was going to kill me because it was real. I'm not the kind of metal band or metal act that can go out and be successful. I will be the guy. This is off the record. Please don't quote me in a legal matter. But I could have the capacity to do something really, really, really silly if I was to promote that kind of anger, you know, and try to pretend like I'm Slipknot or try to pretend like I'm, you know, any of these metal bands out there. My anger is deep. My anger is deep. If we're going to be angry, we're going to play metal, let's go ahead and break shit. Let's go ahead and tear it all up. Let's get on stage and let's start beating each other's ass. Let's start a fucking war. Because metal is only armor. I'm a metalhead. I love Slayer. I love Slayer's brand new albums that they did with Ruben. They sound fantastic. And Tom Araya is one of my favorite lyricists, because he just lays it out there. He talks about his pain and misery. He talks about how he lives in such an illusion and such a world of concrete, you know. I don't know. He's just an amazing lyricist. He talks about religion of torture, and I'm just quoting him. But I do have metal in me, and I plan on releasing some metal in the future. But, you know, it's fun. It's fun. It's fun to go blah, la, la, la. But I will tell you this. You know, I have a very intense voice, and I have many different voices. And with Asperger's, one of the cue points of Asperger's is role-playing. I mean, I can watch Jim Carrey, or I can watch any kind of character, and if I'm in my confidence and I'm in pure consciousness, I will pick up on your character, and I will, like, for lack of a better word, steal your charisma. I mean, I am a director. I know what's pure, and I know when people are honest, and I know what's bullshit, you know, and it's inside of me, and it's torture, you know. But these things, these negative things I say to you are assets as well. They're not just defects. They're assets. So let me continue.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. And I just want to let you know, Bob's popped in. This is the last show of the live broadcast schedule. So if we decide we want to go over, so we can go and get through more music and whatnot, we have free reign to go over time. So
I'll make it quick.
We got 90, all the time we need.
98, me and the band parted, and that became a big deal because the image of the band became more important than the actual vision of the tree, the color, the music, the acoustic sound, and people really got attached to thinking that that band was a band. And we were not a band. There was aspects of it that, you know, I trained those guys so deeply. Now, they can admit it to you today. They're humble today. One of them's in prison. One of them quit the music industry. And the other guy's trying to do a solo project, you know, because they got screwed with the Tantric thing. Their singer is trying to, he thinks he's me. This Hugo Fiera guy, he wants to be me so bad. And, you know, I don't know. Anyways, he joined up with members of Filter and Fuel. I can't tell you their names, but he's trying to start, like, you know, your average kind of, you know, modern rock and roll, you know, Buck Cherry meets Nickelback thing, and that's cool, man. And hey, man, if you like that, that's cool. But so we split, parted ways, There was no firing. Travis Meeks did not fire his band. We just knew that, you know, these guys were more focused. One, they didn't, I will admit this, they didn't get paid a lot for their first record. I got paid everything. That is the truth. Because I wrote everything. I did all the work. I'm the one who had the sleeping bag and slept next to the console. They're the ones who went home to their wives and got pussy. Okay?
Right.
All right, there's a big difference. Rock and roll stars, artists, that, you know. But I will tell you this, there's an unhealthiness to that too, and I have to learn how to have my own space. I'm still single, you know. I've been in some unhealthy relationships and tried to date the wrong people. But anyways, we parted ways. Then I went on to buying a studio that was over 25,000 square feet that I, like, isolated in for years. And I worked on Green that was released in 99. I put together a 7-piece band, and I was on my way to putting together my idea of, you know, I hate to say it, and, you know, I mean, God love him, you know, and you can, you know, bust my balls all you want. But I was trying to put together my version of Dead Can Dance or something, you know.
Hey, no problems with that there, man. I love Dead Can Dance, but
I'm not trying to put together my version of Dead Can Dance anymore, because I found some other things. I got my own thing, and I'm 28 years old, and I found that thing. That's what I started this off with, is I have my craft, and I'm a maestro of my craft. I hired a female vocalist. Her name was Nicole Scherzinger. Nicole Scherzinger is currently the lead singer of Pussycat Dolls. She later, we did 1 month tour, and then after that, you know, I had a really hard time trying to make that transition because of the pressure of the music industry, the expectations of the music industry, the media, the people, the peers in my hometown, the record company. I mean, all of the above. I mean, I had people tell me who I was. And you know, it's just like Jesus Christ. You know, I'm not saying I'm Jesus Christ, but listen, everybody was trying to tell Jesus Christ who he was. You know what he told them? He said, no, motherfucker, I am. I already am. It don't matter what you say. I am. And I believe that consciousness is coming back because we're getting worn out. I mean, or we wouldn't have a black man and a white woman running up for president, balls to the wall. Now, it's really something to talk about, and it's very exciting. That doesn't mean that either one of those guys are going to get it. But we're looking for change, and that's the bottom line. And after all the damage done after, you know, with Bush and him needing to gain control of the oil, which I don't blame the guy and his world, you know, but that's not something I would do, because my intentions and my demeanor for this planet is totally in a totally different vein. So I had a 7-piece band on the Green album. Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you, but with the studio that you did that in, do I remember right? That was actually a converted old distillery?
Old Granddad Whiskey was distilled there for years. It was built in the 1800s.
What a cool place to build a studio.
Oh, yeah, and what a cool place to, like, lock yourself up and do crystal methamphetamine for 6 years, too. So, anyways, so I want to remind you, 96, 97, 98, and 99, I was clean. I take that back. I wasn't clean. I drank to get on stage. I didn't drink a lot, but, you know, touring the way I did and dealing with some of the stress, I did medicate just as regularly as anybody else. The only difference was there was bullshit going on in my head. And being as creative as I am and having all these little defects of character and la 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 la, they needed attended to. And the force of nature was saying, look, if you don't tend to these things, you're going to end up somewhere that you don't like. One, jail. Two, a mental institution, which I've been to before. I've been to jail twice. And three, death. And let me tell you about death. I thought and have thought I was dying over 200 times. Thinking you're dying is much more worse than dying. Because when you die, you die. But thinking you're dying, you don't know when it's going to happen again. So I can't tell you how many times I've died. I keep dying in a panic disorder.
That would feed anxiety in a profound way, I would think.
Well, I get this claustrophobia with crowds. I mean, I start seeing demons. Not literal demons, but these people who just, like, hate me. And I start thinking the whole world hates me. And I'm talking insecure. As beautiful as I may be, which, you know, whether you think I am or not, you know, but in the humble way of saying I'm beautiful as I may be, is as sick as I am. And I have to work extra hard. The harder I work on that sickness, the more beautiful I become. And the artist that I've become today, I believe I offer more today artistically, musically, spiritually, and just charismatically and in the entertainment industry as I ever have, because I've mastered my craft. I've made the acoustic guitar gorgeous. I've made all other instruments gorgeous. I'll go into that here in a late. Let me, 2000, the year 2000, I worked with The Doors. And I did some recordings with them, L.A. Woman and The End. They called me to do some tracks. They wanted me to do Peace Frogs. I said, hell no. I mean, I'm inspired by The End. I mean, that's where I'm going. I want to be in that trip, you know. And they were like, you're an idiot. No one's doing The End. Jim's dead. That's like, you know, an epic. You don't understand. It's the national anthem, you know. But, you know, I just stuck with it. And somehow I ended up in the studio with them, and I played a couple licks that changed the intro of the song, and Krieger just, like, he took to me, and we just, like, melted into this magical experience of recording the song. And then go ahead.
I know from seeing the video performance, when you were being introduced, you know, you could tell how risky the concept of anyone else doing The End was when you were introduced, and, you know, said, this is one brave young man. This is not an easy song. And I was speaking before in the show previous about that performance. I played the audio from that performance on my show months ago, and there's that moment, and I still remember watching this. There's this moment when you first start playing on the video. There, you can see that you're conscious of your surroundings at the beginning, and then there's this moment where you close your eyes and you lose yourself. You can see that you lose yourself in the song, and it's at that point that to almost anyone I've ever shown the clip to, just say, "My God, this man has just channeled Jim Morrison."
Well, and I speak a different language. It's color, it's vibe, it's energy, it's the room. It's not, you know, how I sound. It's not, you know, if I'm on pitch or not. I already kicked my ass enough. You know, I got my own whip, okay? You know, I have scars on my back from how many times I've punished myself for feeling a certain way. Now, that's metaphor, but in the same sense, it's not. You know, I have kicked my ass like a mentor of Kung Fu. You know, of learning my craft. And I've dedicated my life to it, and I've sacrificed a lot. And what has been granted to me is that I was out on my own at 13 years old. And that's why I was signed at 16, because my heart was engaged into the world of music and the industry. Little did I know I was going to grow to be the person I am today, which is miraculous, and I'll go into that deeper. So VH1, The Doors, the lineup, you know, Scott Stapp, Scott Stadel, the singer from Train, Perry Farrell, Ian Asbury from The Cult, who else was on that? I mean, I can't remember all the people who was on that. But everyone did a fabulous job. We did photos together. I actually have some photos with all those guys. And it was a great experience. But I felt disconnected with all those people. And I have met, I can't tell you how many celebrities I have met. And I can count on three fingers people who are spiritually in touch, who have the desire and want and hunger and awareness to seek something deeper than immediate gratification, something that invests into the future, something that invests into your soul, something that means something. Meaning alone is a thought. You know, it is an actual thought. You know, allowing yourself to loathe too much makes you a victim of the way you feel. And then when you feel a victim of the way you feel, that's what they call the disease of addiction. The disease of addiction in textbook is based around being a victim of the way you feel. It is an illusion. But I'm born with it, there isn't a day goes by that I think I'm a victim of the way I feel, but I have to remind myself that I'm more than that. I'm more than my emotions. I'm more than my thoughts. There's something else going on beyond me that, you know, I'm not just the director here, you know. I'm not Steven Spielberg. God is. You understand?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, and excuse me for the controversial word. What I mean by God is, I mean, the force of nature has its way of placing things. It has its way of making things work. I have my chemistry, and I have my gifts, and then the world, and then people, and then love, and then compassion, and then unity, and all these things. And they're all kind of, excuse me, and don't take me the wrong way, they're all kind of queer words. They're all kind of words that might make you feel uncomfortable. And this is coming from a metalhead. I fucking hate anything that's like nice and cool and da-da-da-da-da. Give me a fucking break. Bye, humbug Scrooge. Come on, let's get to it. You know? But I work on that every day. I do. I also have another part of me that, you know, really, you know, I'm a very, like I said, animated character. And when I allow myself to be that animated, theatrical, expressive with my hands, using different voices, you know, doing musicals. Like, you know, the other night I just did a set and I was just going, "Hello, everyone, how are you? Here I am today. It's such a nice day." You get what I'm saying? Making it's like white man's spoken word. You know?
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
I just thinking that, you know, you're turning the dialogue aspect, you know, of the show into something that's slightly more operatic and musical.
And improvisation. That. Pure.
Yeah.
You write on the
absolutely.
Spot. You don't know what you're going to play. I might hit a bad note, but my brain goes, guess what? I can follow that bad note up and make it sound good.
Hey, man, that's being a master of your craft. I was wondering what you thought about actually, you know, we've been talking here for like a good 45 minutes. I was wondering if we might actually get to some music, because I know that the folks that have dropped in the chat room are looking for some music. And you and I put together a little bit of a list of things, and I was wondering if you wanted to start with something early on in the piece and maybe work our way through a little bit as we continue to talk. Or, you know, or do you, where would you like to start from as far as when it comes to music? We got a few things. We've got Whimsical from the first album ready to go, Weapon in the Wounds, the orchestration from Never Drowned,
Whimsical.
And we also have...
Let's play Whimsical.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Bob, let me know when you have Whimsical ready to go in the production chat, and this is from the debut record. Is there any kind of setup that you want to give to this track?
Only that this track was going to be the name and title of the Orange album, because the vibe and energy and the way I felt about the song while I was writing it had a lot to do with the whole entire record. And I do speak about, I can see the orange sky in front of me. you know. And that's one of the main things that really inspired, you know, naming the albums in parentheses and silent. All my albums are silently named by colors. You see them with your eyes, and you go, "That's red." You get what I'm saying? It's not
Absolutely.
One, two, or three. It's confusing. I'm fucking with people, you know. But you know.
But that's good. That's good. You know, you need to take people out of their comfort zones, and I think that's important in any kind of art. So. I totally understand the vibe there. So I guess we should get straight to it. Hey, Bob, from the Orange album, Whimsical, roll it.
Not afraid to fail, not afraid.
Did we lose him, Bob? You still there, Travis? Ah, I guess Bob's going to have to try and reconnect that call there. So while Bob gets Travis back on the line, I'll just fill a little bit of time here. I don't know if I should save this for when we get him back, but anyway, Bob was saying, he goes, I don't know, I think my definition of metal is something different because this doesn't strike me as metal. And Bob was saying, I call it acid folk, which I think is a pretty good terminology for it. You know, we're gonna do some more music here as we move along. And getting a busy signal. Well, we'll work on that. So I tell you what, while we work on that, we're gonna go to another. Why don't we go to another track here? I reckon, Bob, let's go to one of my personal favorites off of Green, Weapon in the Wound. I love this track, and I love the groove, the bizarre tuning, all of it. So go ahead and roll that one, Bob. Weapon and the Wound.
Everything to me.
All right, and we have Travis back on the line. Sorry about that, mate. Glad to have you back.
I think that was awkward because we did talk about orange and then green, but we didn't get to red.
I got a question for you. We'll get to red. Okay, go ahead.
I do have some MP3s on my BlackBerry. Can I send them to you that way?
If you can send them via email, sure.
Trying to figure
Absolutely.
It out.
Absolutely.
Wonder if I could send it.
Yeah, you are having not fun net connection wherever you are at the moment.
No, I'm way out
of
the country right now. I can't get any connection.
God, if that were me, it would be like I don't know, losing the charge that keeps Mark on.
Let's do an exclusive later involving all this. We'll just carry on with this where we are now. Which is cool, I can start where we left off.
Okay, I just when we lost you there for a second, Bob, my producer and I have a little chat that we communicate, you know, off the air with, and he was saying, I have to get. He said, I think I need to have my definition of metal redefined. He said, I'd call this acid folk when listening to Whimsical, and I thought that was a pretty good term.
Wow. Yeah, it's very vibey, and yeah,
absolutely,
takes you to a place. Yeah.
So we'll do the exclusive thing. I mean, you know, one thing for you to just make a mental note of, mate. You know, this program is open to you anytime you like. You got something to share, you don't even need to contact me ahead of time. Just ring in. The place is always open for you. But do you want to talk about Weapon of the Wound and Green a little bit, or do you want to move into something from Red?
Let's move on.
Okay. From Red, we've got Die Born and Dancing in the Wind.
Yeah.
Where would you like to go?
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about what happened in 2000 and 2001.
Well, please do.
The year 2000, a large merger happened with Universal. Seagram's bought out the music industry, and it caused a large merger. So anybody that I was in contact with that had the vaguest understanding of where I wanted to go artistically just disappeared. So I was passed on. So my, potential in surviving through those circumstances were slim to nothing. Outpost was my label. They were subsidiary of Geffen. Geffen got bought out by Interscope. Interscope got bought out by Universal, but Interscope was able to keep their name. During that time I was working on Red. Now, Orange, Green, and Red, I all worked on in a very spiritual state of mind, a very heart, felt, focused state of being. That didn't mean I was clean from, alcohol. I did drink, I didn't use any other drugs, until the end of 1999, I experienced a kidney stone that lasted for a year and a half that I ended up having to take pain medication that I'd never taken before, and I got actually hooked on that pain medication, and then that crosses over into what happens next. I was forced to redo the Red album, and at that point, to me, I mean, this is a little delusional or irrational or unrealistic. To me, that was like giving birth to a child in the hospital and then the doctor saying, you know what? Okay, we got this thing out. Let's go ahead and shove this thing right back up in you.
So you did Red twice.
I did Red twice. The first time I did Red, I was on it. The second time I did Red, I was high. That's when I got sick. That was in 2001. I got sick, and I became, I was already dealing with pain medication, and then it evolved into cocaine. I managed to finish Red, and added songs like Hang On To This, which wasn't on the first original Red album. Die Born wasn't on the original Red album, but there was some amazing other tracks that were on the Red album that weren't on there that were really, really amazing. I went into hiding for 6 years, and all my judgments and everything that I had gone through, you know, and I had never stopped, and I never just, you know, I had brief moments of clarity and chi. Chi is self-love, you know, and I had brief moments of really being able to connect with myself and have that aware moment and going, okay, this is a moment that I can remind myself that this can really be amazing if I tell myself it's amazing. Even it doesn't matter how bad it is, you know, but I had brief moments of that in my life, and some of the best moments I had was making Orange, Green, and Red. And the Doors experience was a wonderful experience. During those 6 years, I tried to hold on to the studio because I was losing money. I wasn't working. I wasn't touring. I went from cocaine to crack to cocaine to crack. And then eventually I found my drug of choice, which was crystal methamphetamine. Now, I struggled. I don't know. You tell me when I get inappropriate. Is there anything that's inappropriate?
Hell no, man. Hell okay, no. Okay. Unless right. you start abusing people, you know, that are directly connected with us, no. Nothing's inappropriate.
Okay, this is all
real. We're being honest here.
This is real stuff. For
yeah.
6 years, I was under the gun of crystal meth and cocaine. And I'm an adrenaline junkie. That goes all the way back to having an acid trip when I was 15 years old and felt like my ass was on fire and that me and God was being separated and that I was going to hell. And these panic attacks and hallucinations and like, you know, weird acid kind of trip, panic things. I mean, it's a big part of my creativity. And what I define that as today is that's the other part of myself that doesn't want to be defined. It wants to be expressed. And becoming one with that fear, it's like the you know, how they did Batman Begins and he had to face all his fears, you know? You know,
yeah.
That's how I can really describe what has been going on with me the whole time. I had, I was vaguely, I guess you can say, now quote me correctly. I was vaguely molested at the age of 2. Now I wouldn't call that molested. I would call that a childhood, early childhood sexual experience. But. My peers and parents and family members, they held on to a very strong form of shame, which kind of like infected me and made me believe that what happened to me was bad.
Right.
I became addicted to sex from 2 years old on. I mean, I was the kid who went around, you know, to every girl on the block saying, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. And I got off on that. I got off on that secret thing, and I was a secretive, and I wasn't trying to be a liar. I just liked that heightened experience, you know. I'm not one to...
Right.
I'm not one to... Here, let's get controversial. Let's say some really controversial words. But I back it up, you know. Good thing about recovery is you know what's good and what's not. And but anyways, I'm glad we have that you have this format. I'm not one to rape someone, but the emotions that come along with that share the same similarities as passion, you know, with between a male and a woman. Now, harming people and doing that kind of stuff, I have no desire to harm someone, because if I was to harm someone, I would stop immediately and go, oh, you okay? Oh, fuck, oh, no, God, oh, God, you know, and I've done that kind of stuff before. In the sense, now don't quote me and hear what you want to hear. Now, I've done things in my past to where I've harmed others and immediately, like, tried to, I've been like, oh, shit, oh, no, but then these are, like, enemies that are, like, ready to call the police and, like, because, you know, Asperger's, you know, narcissism in my home world, everybody wants to call me crazy. I was in special ed, you know, I was the outcast. And this
I can relate
based,
to that thing.
This is all based around the 6 years. And what happened in the 6 years is I experienced a deep philosophical Eastern philosophy negative, and it's called duality. Duality has pros to it, and it has cons to it. The cons to it in some of the deeper Indian philosophy is that if you are addicted to duality, you're far from heaven, because duality is pretty much the battle between the man and the woman. I had my mother ripped apart from me at a very early age. I have not been able to find a way to like share space with a woman in my life my entire life. So music is my woman. It is my baby, you know. And we're talking, I mean, I'm learning how to do that. Now, being honest with myself, yes, but for 6 years I was a transvestite alone. I didn't go out into public and wear pantyhose and da 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 da. I wasn't much on wearing makeup. But I was really into the submissive, vulnerable, dominating, you know, I was lonely, man. You gotta think about it. I didn't date. I wasn't hip on being the front man who got all the the women. Every sexual experience that I had through my success were filthy orgies. And, you know, just filthy, like, you know, let's manipulate the, you know, the 18-year-old to, like, do things she'd never done before. And it just, you know, those emotions will wear you. They will eventually, you know, it's like, okay, you know, the high of the chemicals are one thing, but, you know. Anyways, for 6 years I was in bondage with sexuality. And the battle that I had was World War III. God, the devil, Satan, hell, heaven, and that manifesting on earth. While 9/11 was going down, while, what's his name? I want to call him Adolf Hitler. I don't know why that's so horrible. Saddam Hussein, which is, he's not an Adolf Hitler. Saddam Hussein was, the whole thing was going down. When the whole Bush thing was going down, I was tripping. I can't tell you what I hallucinated in that 6 years of time. It changed my life. It told what I gained from those experiences, that I learned that whatever you believe is real. There's no such thing as not real. That's what's the lie. There's no such thing as an illusion. If we're going to talk about illusion, we need to be careful here, and we need to have a committee, and we need to have, like, you know, we need to sit down at a big ass dinner table and, like, have different opinions about the word illusion and what's reality and how to define illusion. I think illusion has been defined so wrongly and deeply, and excuse me for using the word wrong. I choose not to use the word wrong and change, because I think wrong, change, and God are becoming words that offend people highly. It offends me highly. I was addicted to the idea of wrong. So I was playing God in my own world, and by those experiences, it allowed me to learn things about myself I never would have learned. So anyways, that was those 6 years, and I'll tell you more about that. But yes, in 2001, Red was released, and it was painful. And also in 2001, the band Tantric formed and was released. And that was painful because their bio was built off lies. The media took their rock and roll hunger as them being Days of the New. I totally just got buried in a certain way because, you know... In a lot of ways, you know, I just didn't take care for, I didn't take up for myself at all. I never did interviews about the, you know, what was really going down. But the Days of the New first band were hired hands that I had to beg to come along with me. Nobody wanted to work with me because they thought it was crazy. They thought it was nuts.
I've heard this story before, though, from people that have a real vision of what they want to do, and try and are trying to do something that is unique in their eyes. You know, it's so, you know, people in general tend to like to be sheep and to try and break.
I'll tell you what held it together is my manager. My manager has the ability to tell you what you want to hear, and he spent, you know, 2 years, 3 years telling my band what they wanted to hear. That's what held it together. Now, we were a good-looking band, and I know that's important to some people, you know. There is a lot of charisma in the Kiss approach, characters, Slipknot. I mean, you get all the different characters, and they play the different roles, and they wear the different masks. But in this band, that did not exist. You know, it didn't exist. I was isolated from that band. I had my own bus. I couldn't stand being around the guys because our intellect, goals and ideas and passion were in two different worlds. I was one who wanted to rehearse all the time. These are guys that were insecure and needed to get laid and needed people to tell them that they were amazing, you know, because, you know, the only insecurities I had was I wanted to be told I was amazing for the work I did. And no one was doing that because they were paying attention to the, you know, the ideal rock and roll, you know. I may say names, and forgive me to those who, you know, I'm not, I try not to say bad things about people, but for like, for instance, Hinder, and there's a place for Hinder in the world, but God bless, they are horrible. And they are such, they're so tattooed up to the point, their hairdos, and they're just like, it's like, wow, you're really in the now. I wonder what everybody's going to look like the next decade, you know? I mean, it's like, come on. Mm. Where's the timelessness?
Yeah.
I know you're serving your purpose, but, you know.
What?
It's like Creed.
What exactly?
It's like Creed. Yeah. I like Creed. Look, honestly, Days of the New could have been the Creed. You know, and I'm not trying to justify anything or going, oh, it could have been this or that, because I'm happy with what I have. I'm totally 100% grateful for what I had. But Days of the New could have been the Creed. The problem was I did not have, now forgive me and don't misunderstand me when I say this, because this word can be used in many different perspectives. I did not have the ignorance to be able to pursue and commit to the kind of act that Scott Stapp, the singer, committed to,
and it became very obvious that it was an act after that band fell apart, from what I understand.
Yeah, but I will tell you this: I do love the guy. He does remind me of a cocky school jock, you know. Which is fine, but he's still a good dude. He really is. I've been to his house. I stayed at his house for a week. You know, he's called me up and said, "Hey, man, you know, me and you together would be better than just me, you on your own, or me on my own." I'm just like, dude, I want to do my art and my voice. Like, you know, it's your voice is not that great. I mean, it served its purpose at the time, and you know, but anyways. 2001, Red was released. 2001, Tantric came out.
And you got buried. I'm going to throw something in here. I guess I have a friend down here that I think got lost, similar to the way that you did, in all that mergerdom. I don't know if you're familiar with probably Australia's greatest blues guitar player, a guy by the name of Mark Lazat. He goes under the name Diesel. And he's been doing huge things here for years. And back in about 1998, he moved up to the he packed up, went to the United States, brought his keyboard player, and went and got himself an American band, did this huge production album. And just as he's in the middle of mixing it, all that stuff happened. And just like what happened to you, the woman who had originally signed him was no longer part of the picture. And so then the person who gets is handed, you know, the album, completed record, it was quite a good record as well, turns and says, "I don't know what to do with this Aussie boy. Here's your album. Go home."
Yeah. Well, let me say this. You know, in 2001, Tantric broke, and they broke stating that they were the band of Days of the New, and that they had some, that there was something that existed inside of them that made it all happen. Now, they were witnesses of my work. I will give them that credit. And they were witnesses, and they were victims of my abuse, because I was abusive to those guys, because they were young kids who did not want and did not have, I mean, they didn't have Asperger's. I had mild autism, and mild autism is a strong focus. You give me something to focus on, and I will overdo it to the point of, like, you know, I will do something with it. They didn't have that. They wanted to hang out and talk about cool things, you know. But here's the other thing. They were contracted and hired hands. And in the photos and the media, the looks, the image, became more important than the art itself. That's what made me sick. That's where my animosity came from. And then in all that, you know, I didn't take up for myself. And, yes, I did have a lot of anger towards them. And in my past interviews and stuff, I did look guilty for being the guy who fired him. But we parted ways, one, because they wasn't taking a spiritual journey. They were just willing to kind of, like, be passed around. And that's what happened. They've been passed around, you know. Not to say I'm not proud of everything they did, because what I believe is Tantric is their baby, and that Tantric was their opportunity to express what they were capable of doing. Now, I will say this. If it wasn't for me, and if it wasn't for what I taught those guys, they would not be where they were. And the same goes for Nicole Scherzinger, to a degree. Now, Nicole Scherzinger has her own natural R&B flavor. But there's things that I taught her that if it wasn't for that, and people that I introduced her to, that she would not be where she was. Now, I'm not trying to, like, be bitter by trying to gain this, like, instant relief, gratification of glory. I could care less. I'm just letting you know what I've done. You know, a lot of people don't know what I have done in the music industry. I am a strong force in the music industry that has been underrated only because I'm fighting for the right cause. I'm still surviving. I'm making enough money to get by. My art is better. Things are good. You want to play something from Red?
Sure. I reckon I'd like to go with Die Born. And you mentioned to me on the phone that this has actually become quite a song for many of the guys serving over in Iraq.
Well, Die Born was actually on the soundtrack of Black Hawk Down.
Right.
And it was
right.
Played in the movie.
And that would have given the exposure of that track to them. And
absolutely.
I personally think that this is a genius track, and for the technically curious, it's played in Dadgad.
Yeah, it was the track where I pushed my voice as far as I could go. My father has that voice, you know. He naturally has that, you know, AC/DC, Robert Plant, Chris Cornell range that just, and, you know, me, you know, I'm more of a la 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 la, you know.
Right.
But,
and you know, I understand the importance of influence from musical family, because I don't think I've told you this. My mother was a concert pianist. Used to do, you know, concerts of all the two piano stuff for years. Unfortunately, she's now suffering from Alzheimer's, and I don't think she could even play anymore these days. But probably the greatest musician that I personally have ever known. And has a huge following. Bob's telling me I didn't send Die Born. Is that possible? I guess we'll have to move on to Dancing with the Wind then, Bob. How the hell did I miss that? There you go, man. Somehow
you
know, I blew that. Yeah, it looks like somehow I buggered it up. I swore that I sent that this afternoon. Bob, you might... I will actually send that to Bob right now as we listen to the next as we listen to the as we listen to something else. Is that all right?
Yeah. Can I ask you another question?
Sure.
Can you play any tracks off a MySpace page?
Bob probably can do that.
Because
which
have
MySpace
some tracks
page?
Off the MySpace page that is some new material. It's not album material, but it is closer to the sound of the album if we want to approach that. But yeah, let's do Dancing with the Wind. Dancing with the Wind is by far my favorite track of all three records. It was the one where I was fully trying to express myself. Now, I did fail to a degree because I used over 120 tracks, full orchestra, 60-piece choir, from, you know, real bells, drums, guitars. I mean, it just on and on and on. Trumpet. I mean, I used full orchestra, trumpets, everything. It was just insane. It was it is my baby, and I will say this: the next record has that style of songwriting. The next record has the sound of the first record in an acoustic guitar sense. It's very acoustical, as were the second and third album. You couldn't hear the acoustics as much. The new record, the acoustic guitar is so fat up in your face, and any organic, like, acoustical instrument is very, very thick. But also, the next record is a continuum, like the Green album. It's one whole story. It's like a movie. Days of the New presents Tree Colors. You know, it's like this, you know, story. I'm introducing you into this world of this continuum thing that I'm fighting for, and I will continue to do.
But, well, right on, man. We have Guy Bourne heading to the studio as we speak. Our good friend David from Maine in the chat room is already all over it before I have to do it. So while we're waiting for that to come down, why don't we go ahead and run Dancing with the Wind, Bob. This is a great track. Roll it.
It's waiting. see the road is getting longer. What I don't know, it don't hurt me, and I see no truth in your eyes.
All right, mate, we're back. Little confusion. All right. Little confusion there. You still with me?
Yeah.
I think the silence at the end of the track kind of caught the producer a little off guard, but that's cool. It's just an amazing sound. And if that's a sense of what Purple's going to be about, I can't wait to hear it. And do you have an estimated date for release, or is this a when it's done, it's done, don't ask me?
Yeah, I was going to get into
done.
That. Did you pull any of the orchestrations up?
Yes, I did. I pulled the orchestration from Never Drown, and I also have Skeleton Key.
Why don't you go ahead and play the orchestration from Never Drown, and then we'll get into some of this recovery stuff, and then the A&E's intervention, and then me getting clean and starting the next record, and then what I've been doing touring.
Okay. All right, Bob, you have that orchestration all queued up there, mate? Just waiting for a response, making sure he's got it. You should have it all queued up. Bob? Yes, okay. Go ahead. This is the end of the track Never Drown, and this is for those of you that aren't familiar with Travis's work, there's a lot, especially in the second two records, there's a lot of these orchestrational pieces within the album. And this is just to give a taste of how far the concept of Tree Colors can go in my mind, in my humble opinion, sonically. So go ahead and roll that, Bob, please.
Thank you.
that's all real. There's no synthesis.
Yeah, it was all real. It was all expensive, too.
Yeah, people tend to be expensive.
Yeah. But I've made friends over the years, and I've found little tricks and crannies and learned how to play a lot of those instruments myself. So let me pick up where I left off. So after Red, I told you about my experiences with amphetamines, the duality, the sexual experiences, the delusions. I continued to write, and I wrote probably about two albums worth of material that I plan on releasing in the future as Colors. I'm going to release these albums as Colors, but right now I'm focusing on Purple. So I do have some stuff that on the website that I do want to release later on, you know, full band or acoustically even, you know, there's some good acoustic stuff. But here it is. I've been in 7 treatment centers. I just recently got diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, which is a mild autism social disorder, and it's a very high form of OCD. I stayed in the system my entire life. The best thing my father ever did for me was keeping me in the system to keep me out, because I would be in prison, and that's the God's honest truth. And music and my passion for art and to express myself has kept me alive as well. Now, here it is. In 2005, I appeared on A&E's Intervention. It was one of their first episodes. And if I'm not mistaken, I think they have over 30 million viewers. And it was a very highly viewed show. And since I have been clean, I've experienced a lot of people that have experienced their own revelations from my exposure and me being honest and allowing the world to see me dirty. And I could tell you right now, God knows, you know, if Jim Morrison could have got out and said, hey, man, you know, I'm a dirty bastard, I'm okay with it. Or, you know, Janis Joplin or Jimi Hendrix or Kurt Cobain or Lane Stanley or Shannon Hoon, if those people could have got up and said, hey, you know what, I'm not perfect and I'm not everything you think I am, you know, that there's art in that. And I found that little niche, and that's part of my survival. That's part of my passion. And I'm comfortable with peanut butter and jelly, and I'm also comfortable with sushi, you know, or cat, you know. But so I was appeared on A&E's Intervention, and yeah, it was ghetto. I got some ghetto. Everybody got a little ghetto, you know. 2005, I got clean. I got into recovery. And I moved to Utah. One of the things about me is I've always sought God and balance or some form of truth. I've suffered from delusions, you know, off the record. And I want you to understand what I mean by this is, you know, don't quote me wrong. I don't think I'm Christ. But in the past, I have struggled with hero syndromes that I need to save the world, that I'm Jesus Christ, or I'm a prophet, or a chosen one, and da-da-da-da-da. As I've gotten older, I have found a lot of truth in that, but experiencing humility over the process and understanding my place in the world and understanding how important everybody else's job is, too. And if it wasn't for everybody else, who would I have to save? And just, like, understand, you know, there's things... I have healing capabilities. I mean, and I can also fuck your life up, too. But I work really hard on not doing that, you know? I bet, although I do not have control over your emotions, no matter what. That is the God's honest truth. That is one of the things that, you know, we're sitting in the committee right now of illusion. We're talking illusion. It's one of the things about illusion that, you know, we get drilled in our head that, that people control our emotions. No one controls our emotions. We feel the way we feel. And it's just like Kung Fu or meditation. It's how you sit down and handle those emotions. you know, and I struggle with that every day. It was a miracle for me to open my eyes and witness coming out of this very dedicated, committed. I thought I was going to die. That's the only reason why I chose to do the show. I did not know that I was going to be intervened. I was told it was a documentary. And the only reason why I chose to do the show was because I thought I was going to die, and I wanted to say hello, cruel, goodbye, cruel world. I hope that you know, a unit of people come together and form a new consciousness after electricity is gone and the bombs have went off and you know, half the world is dead, or 75 or 99% of the world is dead. To those humans who still survive, please, you know, that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? I mean, that's the shit I was thinking. I was going to say it on TV, but I was so fucking high that I couldn't move. Because that shit spooks you, man.
Well, I watched the program for the first and only time just last week, and the thing that struck me about the program was that tricky little the trick that they basically play on you. The fact that you're given the idea that it's a documentary, and yet there's this intervention that they're going to pull on you.
Oh, yeah, and I was one of the first ones, so, I mean, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Some people today, they have an idea, you know what I mean? Because now it's well known. I mean, sooner or later, they're going to have to cancel the show because everybody's going to know. And, but, anyway.
The punch of the... Go ahead.
I got clean 2005. I went through 2 years of recovery. I experienced a relapse that I'm not ashamed to say. I've got 6 months now. I did have 2 years. I traded that 2 years in for 6 months. Regardless, to me, it's a number, man, and I'm living it today. But I will tell you this. That relapse was the best thing that ever happened to me, because I have mentioned have panic disorder, Asperger's syndrome, these other things. And I'm not trying to get you to give me any empathy or feel sorry for me, because I have the same problem. You know, we all have problems. And we all got to deal with them in our own state, you know. But the thing is that's what I suffer from, and that's just the bottom line. And I will tell you this. You ever do that?
Oh, all the time, man. Brain farts are like
what
a disease for me. Well, you were talking about the relapse was the best thing that ever that happened to you.
There it is. I'm not trying to romance or glorify drugs, but I do. All those people out there who are still continuing to use them, God bless them. I hope they enjoy them the best way they can, just like chocolate, you know. But, you know, God, I couldn't imagine eating as much chocolate as I did crystal methamphetamine, I'll tell you that much. But you know, because I stayed high. And I pushed my heart and adrenaline as far as it could go. 2005, I got clean, got into recovery, moved to Utah. I did go into a treatment center that is known for a lot of celebrities have been there. In the celebrity field, maybe I'm breaching a little form of anonymity, but Ashley Olsen was in there, Lindsay Lohan, singer of Puddle of Mud. It don't matter, man. These guys need to come to terms with, you know, it's like I watch where they chase the celebrities. I've seen it go down. I watched it go down with the other Olsen twin, and she like puts her umbrella over her head and hides, and they're all taking pictures of her. I'd be like, hey, here I am, dude. What do you want? What's so fucking amazing about me? I'm going to get some coffee, dog. Get out of my face. La, 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 la. Got a picture? There you go. You want some coffee? Here. I buy coffee for a round for all you motherfuckers. You know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe there's a logistic to it, because maybe it makes you not worth as much because of the picture sales and how much it's worth, but I don't know. Anyways.
Well, when you say that the relapse was the best thing that happened to you, was it that it reaffirmed the fact that you did have the control to be able to beat it again?
I'll tell you why. Because I went to the emergency room three fucking times. I'm going and trying to jack off and wear pantyhose again and trying to, you know, create my bitch, because that's what happened. I created my bitch, you know. I had my own woman. My woman did whatever I told her to do. That was my Adam and Eve. She was my slut, my hoe. She was my everything. I told her what to do, and she did whatever I wanted to do, and it was the most enlightening, as close as I can get to heaven place as I can imagine. The only thing that I can tell you is that that sure served short life. My heart can't take it no more, nor can my mind. And there's more things in the world that I love, and I have to stay focused on those things, because I tried to go back and do that, and I ended up in the emergency room 3 times because I thought I was dying. So my experience was not good, you know. And the next day I'm calling, you know, someone who supports me, and I'm going, hey, man, I got high. You know what he said? He said, was it good? I said, no, I went to the emergency room 3 times. He's like, oh, well, that sucks. Is there anything good about it? I said, well, I looked at a little bit of porn, and I don't know. I mean, but I look at porn anyways. I mean, you know, I can't say that there's really anything. No. So what got me out of that relapse was not shaming myself, is accepting that as part of my journey and not saying, oh, I just, you know. Well, I guess where I'm trying to go at is there's no such thing as perfection. Human flaw is perfection, and understanding the perfection in human flaw is perfection, in my eyes. And I can't tell you what you think. You know, this is my opinion. I can't speak for the world, but this is just what I think. Now, I am based out of Utah. I do live there. I do tour around a lot. I am a gypsy. I'm not moving too fast where you are, am I?
No, man, you're fine. We are probably coming tight on up on the end, but you know, I think we'll continue this on another night if you like.
2006, I started touring, and then I did a solo tour. Then I started the trio tour. I took up the step to form the full project Tree Colors, which I'm now working on now. A continuum of the colors, symbolizing the tree. The tree is a powerful symbol of me that I've received in a vision. Make fun of me all you want, but it's the truth. It consists of organic music, theatrical world, classical, poetic, acoustic, multi-instrumental, ancient, gypsy, kind of Euro, street Euro band kind of sound. I'm continuing to tour. I've been touring for 2 years. Gone through a lot of trials and tribulations and learned a lot about myself. And just so you know, a new album has just been released March 5th called The Definitive Collection. It is a great compilation of orange, green, and red. I'm not the biggest fan of the artwork. I really think I got screwed around on that, but that's okay because I think that karma will come back on me on that, but that's fine. But I am a fan of the chosen songs. It's not a best of, and it's not a greatest hits. It's a compilation. It's a different approach. You know, I'm not a best of band. I'm not here to, you know, I don't need that. I would rather quit right. The music industry than be Aerosmith. Even though Steven Tyler's amazing, I was listening to Permanent Vacation today. That's right when they got sober. And he has some soul in that record. There was a couple songs I was like, wow, he's black or something, man. But anyways, that's not my goal. And I don't love music enough to stay in the music industry just to do it that way. I would rather start up a spiritual store and sell chimes and play, you know, Koto guru music and, you know, set my environment. That's my vibe, man. If I can carry that vibe around in my music, art, that's where I'm going. And if something by the fate of God shuts me down, then that's fine. I accept that, you know, whatever. But so far, so good. But it definitely is another piece of art to add to the collection. The definitive collection is definitely another piece to add to the collection. I'm currently working on the record. I plan to release it in fall. I do not have a set date. This title is a silent title. You look at it, the color will be purple. It does not say purple on it, but it will say something new. Days Avenue is a production company. I'm now representing myself. I can release many things under this project, such as my drummer, Ray Rizzo, who I've worked with for 10 years, who is a master percussionist and jazz drummer.
He's. I studied drums for 10 years, man. The guy is a monster.
Yeah, well, he's in theater, too. He's an actor. He's a scriptwriter. He's a journalist. The guy is multi-talented. I've seen the guy naked on stage with writing all over him, and then he pissed in a floor tile. It was amazing. But I'm still Travis Meeks, but I am kind of coming to this place where, you know, I'm, you know, announcing myself as Maestro. Whatever. It, you know, I'm not P. Diddy, you know, but, you know, I am a master of my art, and I do feel like a maestro, and when I have my mojo and I'm on stage, I'm just like, here it is. La la la. Here comes the music, and it's all, it's coming right at you, you know. And I'm just like, the front man part of me is coming out. I mean, it's been suppressed for so long, you know.
I understand. I've had a question. Sorry to interrupt you, but I've had a question that's been popped up in the chat room a number of times, and I think I need to get to it. Someone's asking about why Malcolm Gould quit the tour.
Malcolm Gould quit the tour because Malcolm Gould is a session type kind of player that we rushed the auditions, and. As soon as, you know, my manager and booking agent found out, you know, we got, you know, a bass player that we kind of liked. I love Malcolm Gould, by the way. He's a great bass player, but he has the inability to grow as an artist, and he's not a multi-instrumentalist, and the only thing he could do is bass. So it was holding me and Ray Rizzo back. The other thing was, he had a hard time learning how to play bass in other ways. He played bass in one specific way. So I was constantly doing the same. It's like the first band, trying to make them play their instruments, and they don't even know how, you know, and it's like they don't have the desire or willingness. The other thing is that personality. Malcolm Gould needs a lot of space. Travis Meeks needs a lot of space. I'm an environment freak. Not so much a control freak, but I'm an environment freak. I got to control my environment. You know, and I'm going to release a lot of artwork and pictures of settings and things I do that give color and vibe and energy to the music for the next record. Simply, the last week of the tour was absolutely amazing. Me and Ray Rizzo opened up like nobody's businesses. Our voices got louder, stronger, our pitches got better. I was playing like a madman on guitar. I turned the bass up on my acoustic guitar. I was playing the bass lines to Enemy, and we were a two-piece. And if you're familiar with the White Stripes, I would recommend Days Avenue, Ray Rizzo, and Travis Meeks before White Stripes any day, unless you want to, like, you know, go around talking about your tattoos and what kind of piercings you got and who's cool. You know, because I still think White Stripes has a fad to him about him. Even though he's very artistic. He's a very artistic guy, and I respect him a whole lot. But I still think he's faddy. You know, he's still got a fad to him. And I don't know, you know. Which people tried to mold me into the grunge scene. They can't do it. And I have a secret. I have a secret to why they can't do that. But I wanted to move on to some other information. I have three MySpaces. Those MySpaces are, of course, starting all MySpace.com/ Travis Meeker, M-E-E-K-E-R. That's my personal page. Then there's Days of the New, and that's the popular page. It's very popular. It's easier to get to, you know. It's easier to remember, you know, the brand name. And then there's Tree Colors, which is promoting the future art of Days of the New presents Tree Colors. Tree Colors is not a side project. Tree Colors is actually an extension of the name of Days of the New. So maybe if you see me in your town next, you may see Days of the New in the marquee, or you may see Days of the New presents Tree Colors. But if you're following, and you're following closely, you will know you know. It's Days of the New presents Tree Colors. And it's this, you know, it's a different way of approaching music. It's very much like the 60s, but it's the 60s on crack. And I'm hoping that spirituality and the hunger for depth and meaning and glory comes back full force. Now, I may be a dreamer, and you can call me, you know, delusional and crazy and out of my mind, but this is the way it is. I also have a website. It's called daysofthenew.com. You can also check out travismeeks.com. I run all three of the MySpaces and also run the daysofthenew.com. I'm currently working on the artwork for it. I wanted to mention some other things that I did that some people might be interested in if they're not familiar with it. I did work with Guns N' Roses. Not Guns N' Roses, actually. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Velvet Revolver.
Revolver. Yeah, that was there was a lot of noise about you taking the singing gig for that for a while.
Well, I got some tracks, and I'm going to get them out there somehow. I'm going to find a loophole. I'm going to get these tracks out there. They're cool, man. I got like two or three tracks of me singing with these guys, and they're mixed really well. You know?
Hey, that was a Geffen thing. Dave Geffen knows what he's doing.
Well, and I also auditioned and became good friends with the bass player, the former bass player of Alice in Chains, Mike Starr.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
One of my favorite bands of all time.
Yeah, and well, I'm tight with Starr. I know Cantrell very well. He's helped me in my recovery. I think he's still got a lot of years in recovery. But we toured together on Metallica tour. Anyways, these are some other things that I've done. Now, if you want to find some other music, here's some other things if you want to find some music. Black Hawk Down, the soundtrack, Die Born. The Godzilla soundtrack, Running Knees. That's the title of the song. Die Born is the title of the song, Running Knees. The Crow, Salvation, Independent Slaves, the name of the song. Half-Baked, Seasons Change. Varsity Blues, that's a strange one. I don't know, but Two Faces is the name of the song on that one. And one of my favorites is Heavy Metal 2000, Rough Day. Rough Day is actually a kind of cut-down, edited version of the first acoustical song I had ever wrote at like 14. And then you will find on the Stoned Immaculate CD by The Doors, The End and L.A. Woman, if you're not familiar with these things.
I will check some of that. I hate to do this to you, Travis, but we're seriously running out of time here. Can I at least get a loose idea that we'll continue this in the future as the album gets closer to release, and I will be making this entire program available for podcast via my MySpace page, and I'll get it to you so that people who missed it can get to it, because I know the friends of yours from MySpace that are in the chat room right now have had an absolute ball with these now 2 hours that we've done. And I've had an absolute ball. I so appreciate your openness and your ability to bear yourself in ways that are unexpected. I think a whole bunch of people that thought they knew something about you have a better understanding about who you are now after this rather amazing 2 hours. I really, really, really enjoyed it.
Well, you're really easy to deal with, and again, with social disorder, I'm very clicky, and I am conditioned of who I speak with and how I operate. And you know, your energy is really well, and I appreciate you very much. And I hope that we can work together again in the future, and I hope we can continue this.
We will, my friend. We will, my friend. It's been such a great time. I'll be in touch. I'll give you a bell sometime next week, and we'll have a chat, and we'll see where we take this.
That's awesome, Mr. Fox. All right, man.
Love you, brother. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Love you.
All right, man. Take care of yourself. Folks, thank you to all the new listeners that have been in the chat room. I'm so glad to have all these fresh faces in the chat room. It's just been fantastic. Thank you to Travis. That was You know, I didn't know where it was going to go, and that was the whole idea. So, I mean, this is why we do this. This is why we call this thing conversation radio. It's not too quick, and it's not too shallow. We try and get into the hot and heavy. So we're going to get out of here real quick. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing. Thanks to not thanking Scott for the music today. Thanks to Travis for all the music today. Thanks to all the new listeners. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow. Oh, we'll see you Monday.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat.